A new legal ruling here in London will affect British arms sales to Saudi Arabia. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. The Court of Appeal in London has temporarily blocked new licenses for arms exports to Saudi Arabia, things that could be used in Yemen, like fighter jets and bombs. That trade is worth at least $6 billion to Britain. Saudi Arabia has been supporting Yemeni government forces against rebels in a conflict that's killed 7,000 people. The BBC's Jonathan Frewen has more.
The judges upheld part of an appeal by the Campaign Against the Arms Trade. They said it was irrational and therefore unlawful for the British Secretary of State for International Trade not to assess possible breaches of international law by Saudi Arabia when deciding whether to grant arms export licences. The ruling obliges the UK government to evaluate whether future exports could lead to violations, but it gave the government the option of applying to the court for exemptions. In London, I'm the BBC's Jonathan Frewen for Marketplace.
And the British government has said it will appeal. Let's do the numbers. Oil jumped more than 3% after Iran shot down an American drone, raising fears of military conflict. Meanwhile, shares are up after the U.S. Federal Reserve signaled it would cut interest rates next month. Germany's DAX is up 1%, while Chinese stocks closed up 2.4%. And diesel cars, you'll know, are known polluters. But here in Britain and across much of Europe, diesel trains also pollute. And the government here wants all diesel trains gone by the year 2040. Well, today it's trialling a rare new hydrogen-powered train, the Hydroflex. The BBC's Tom Burridge has more.
I'm in the cabin of the Hydroflex. Beeping the horn, I've been driving it this morning. It looks, in the first carriage, really like a normal UK train. But in the carriage behind it, there are huge tanks which store the hydrogen at high pressure. The hydrogen's pumped into a fuel cell. It's mixed with oxygen from the air, and that is converted into electricity and ultimately drives the motors underneath this train.
And Tom, the really critical thing is that the emissions are what? Water.
Yeah, so zero emissions, and I've got a vial of water in my hands, pure water. I'm told you probably shouldn't drink it, though, but it is completely green, probably as green as trains get. There are only two hydrogen trains actually in service of ferrying passengers in Germany. This is a test train. What they need to do, the next challenge, if you like, is take all of this equipment, fit it away so you can put more seats in to carry passengers.
Now, it sounds too good to be true. Is there a but? Is it, for example, prohibitively expensive?
It's not. I mean, hydrogen trains can't go hugely fast, so it's not really thought to be a solution for intercity trains. These trains are seen as part of the solution for replacing diesel-only trains on parts of the UK network or around the world where you don't have electric cabling overhead. On those parts of the network, one of the solutions is you have a hydrogen train. This is a bi-mode train. That means you can take electricity from overhead cables where there are cables. If there aren't, it can run off hydrogen.
Tom Burridge. Now, if you think of bartering, exchanging goods without money, is something a little, well, prehistoric. Think again, countries in crisis and even big companies barter today. The BBC's Su Ping Chan has been looking into this. And Su, there are a fair few countries that are in crisis right now.
Yeah, and I think the most obvious one that I can think of certainly is Venezuela, which is being ravaged by hyperinflation. You know, what bought a washing machine maybe just a year ago now only buys a sack of potatoes. So we've seen fishermen swap their catch for other foodstuff or medicines. There's internet groups on Facebook where people barter antibiotics for baby milk formula sometimes. Greece during the euro crisis as well. We saw a lot of small communities swap their things, but it's also big business for governments and business as well.
Now, tell me about Iran specifically, because the long history of sanctions means they've actually got quite a lot of experience with bartering.
Yeah, about 40 years of experience since the Iranian Revolution, the US introduced sanctions then. Sanctions got a lot tougher in 2010 when the United Nations introduced sanctions against Iran to try and curb curb its nuclear ambitions. And that forced Iran to get very creative with some of its business deals. So Iran is the biggest buyer of Indian basmati rice, and India is the second largest importer of Iranian oil. So what we saw is Iran couldn't use its currency to buy that basmati rice directly. So they started offering crude oil, even gold held in vaults, in exchange for basic staples like rice, cooking oil and tea. So no money cross borders. So it was effectively a barter exchange.
Now, with the US saying there are no waivers for importing Iranian oil, that doesn't work right now.
Yeah, so businesses on both sides are slightly nervous. So it's very uncertain at the moment.
And apart from the current geopolitical troubles, bartering also went on during the Cold War. There's some amazing examples.
Yeah, they are fascinating. So during the rise of the Soviet Union, rubles couldn't be used outside those borders. But it was also a huge market and many businesses wanted to get into that market. So we saw some unusual deals. Under one deal, Pepsi actually traded its soft drink for Russian vodka. And it was a very fruitful trade. They even, so Pepsi, they owned Pizza Hut at the time, and they said, okay, we can't accept your currency, but we can accept your tomato paste. And you know what? We're going to spread it across our pizzas in Western Europe.
And my favorite example, ABBA?
Yeah, so you just have to remember that it's not just goods that are bartered, it's also services. And in the case of ABBA, they did something similar in the Soviet Union where they earned royalties in the form of fruit, vegetables, crude oil, which were then sold on the global market.
Fascinating stuff. The BBC's Su Ping Chan. Thank you.
Thanks, Anu.
I give you radio, you give me your ears. Thanks for listening, everyone. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.